Wednesday, the 30th of December, that makes it Yud Dalet Tevis, Rabbi Amram Nemeth, Shabbos in the Kitchen, part one of
two.
As you know, the people watching.
Peshus, my father and Kola Choshev, and the people watching online, and Dudi. Last time I spoke in the entire way was in August in Av from Ramsgate. It was getting slightly cold there, so I made my way back this morning. The shul was quite damp, and therefore we're here today to move on to the next part, which is Shabbos in the Kitchen, part one. But what relevance would that have to this week's parasha, and what right do I have to start talking about Shabbos in the middle of the winter? Which I think is extremely relevant. You know, someone emailed me, a mother of one of the boys that I teach, a few weeks ago, because I was teaching the child about the fact that the others kept the mitzvahs, or many of them, and Yosef in Mitzrayim also tried to keep many of the mitzvahs as well. And she said, it says, Ki nashani elokim es beis avi. Yosef named his son Menashe because I forgot my father's house. So I said, Chas v'shalom, to interpret the pasuk, to say that he'd forgotten the Messiah of his father, and throughout the Pesukim, and throughout the Rashis, and all the Mepharshim, on all these last few Parashias, you see, first of all, as soon as he comes to be an Eved with Potiphar, Potiphar says, Vayara doinav ki Hashem itoy. He saw that Hashem was with him. He saw that he behaved differently to all the other Avodim there, and he realized that he was an Eved Hashem, not an Eved to Potiphar. And that's Mepharish in the Pasuk from right at the beginning. And then we move on to the story of Ashes Potiphar, and what protected Yosef, so to speak. How did he keep his morals and who he is? Because the Musti Yochner Shalavib, because he had the image of his father, and that was counter to his Yetzirah that he had. And then finally, at the end of the story, after Yosef has revealed himself to his brothers, and we know he sends back Hagolas to show that he remembered they were learning Egla Rufa, and he remembered all the Torah that his father had taught him. So clearly, ki nashani elokim es kol beis avi doesn't mean Yosef forgot chas v'shalom any of the Messiah that he received from his father. And on the contrary, he had overcome one of the biggest challenges anyone can ever face, which is being an alien, being completely by yourself in a culture that makes fun of everything that he held dear, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They had Avodah Zarah, they were immoral, they were full of znus, and he held strong. So on the contrary, he was learning, obviously, like we see from the Agolos. He was protecting himself, he was a Yerushalayim, and he was carrying on the traditions and the Mesorah that he had learned in his father's house. So what does it mean anyway, but the Kinashani Elokim? There's many pshatim from the Ksav, the Kabbalah, and the Malbim. The shortest one, just to mention this morning, before we carry on, there's a Netziv that says that Hashem enabled Yosef not to be too homesick. Because he was from a good family, he was from a loving family, he had a bit of a rough time with the brothers, but his parents he got on with. And if someone is homesick, they can't get on with the job that they need to do, and they can't get on with their daily life and routine, because they're too busy thinking about the past. But if you think about the past too much, you can't get on with the future. So says the Netziv, Hashem enabled Yosef to be less homesick, and to be able to focus on the job that he had at task, which was a large one, which was to run the economy in Mitzrayim. That's what it means, ki nashani elokim. But the Messiah and the traditions of his father stayed strong. But not so much, or he was worried more with his children. Because he had the zchus and the merit of being brought up in Yaakov's house, amongst the rest of Klal Yisrael, so to speak, at the time. But Ephraim and Manasseh didn't have that ability, didn't have that zchus. So to an extent, he was worried for them. And the Ramban earlier in Parshas Toldos, when discussing the others keeping the mitzvahs, and when answering the famous question, which is how could Yaakov marry two Sishtei Achoyos if that goes against the Torah, if the others kept even Erev Tavshilin and even all the other mitzvahs. And the Rabban says a loaded statement, which we cannot go into too much this morning, that in Eretz Yisrael they kept all the mitzvahs, but as soon as they came out of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't necessarily keep all of them, only the ones they felt they had to. But what's important for us for today's shiur is that he says Yosef kept Shabbos in Mitzrayim. Yosef kept Shabbos in Mitzrayim, that was a choice. Not necessarily because he felt that he had to keep all the mitzvahs of the Torah, because Mitzrayim obviously is out of Eretz Yisrael. And at the time, the Avos definitely kept all the mitzvahs inside Eretz Yisrael, but not necessarily outside Eretz Yisrael. So why did Yosef keep Shabbos in Mitzrayim? And the Rabban says, not even for himself, it's because he had two children, Ephraim and Manasseh. And how was he going to ensure that the special Mesorah from his father, of Emunah in Hashem, of the fact that the world started from a beginning, that Hashem created the world, we weren't here forever, we have a purpose, how was he going to instill that chinuch into his children only by keeping Shabbos? And it was Shabbos that kept Ephraim and Manasseh, so to speak, on the path to stay avodim to Hashem, even when they were amongst a culture that was opposing to what they stood for. So says the Rabban, because of his children, Yosef chose to keep Shabbos, although you could argue he wasn't mechoyev to keep all the mitzvahs. I mean, you see later, and next week in Parashat Shmos, that Moshe, the Medrash says, asked Paro for one day off, which was a Shabbos, so that Klal Yisrael could come and he could teach them. And Medrash says that he taught them from Megillas. But he doesn't specify what was inside those Megillas. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and Emes Liakov teaches us that, you know, we say a few times on Shabbos, Mizrach Shaliyom Shabbos, but it doesn't have much mention of Shabbos itself. Considering we say it on Friday night, we say it Shabbos morning, twice with Hayom Yoim, and then Ipsuka Dezimra, you would think it would talk more about the mitzvahs of Shabbos, or the Oinek Shabbos, or something to do with that. But it doesn't. So what's the connection of Mizmor Shir to Shabbos, says Rabbi Yaakov, because that was the Megillah, and that's what Klal Yisrael studied in Mitzrayim with Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's how he taught them Emunah and Bitachon Bashem, the concepts of Tzadik V'Ra'aloi, the Menoscha Baleilois, that the Mitzrayim are now in charge, and they're the evil ones. We're Klal Yisrael, and we're suffering. How could that be? How could Hashem allow that to happen? Well, Moshe, one of the ways Moshe taught that to them after his return from Midian was through the Tehillim of Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, which he authored and he wrote. So this carried on, this keeping Shabbos in Mitzrayim, right to when Klal Yisrael were avodim to Paro. So I would like to discuss this morning a bit of Oinek Shabbos, or how to keep Oinek Shabbos in terms of cooking. Because if you look, I didn't look up the Medrash, but I think the Medrash that tells us that Yosef kept Shabbos was specifically the Tvoyach Tavach V'Hochin, was that he prepared food for Shabbos. It was the Oinek Shabbos that we hear about. And it's interesting because that's what the Torah chose to reveal to us in terms of his Shmira Shabbos. The fact that he enjoyed Shabbos, he prepared food for Shabbos. And that's what we hear about, and that's what hopefully protected, well, that's what protected his children. You know, it was successful, his mission. Because every week, the famous Dvar Torah, we bench our children like, to be like Ephraim and Manasseh. Why specifically them? Because they managed to withstand all the challenges of Golus, and we hope our children will be able to do the same and stay committed members of Klal Yisrael and committed to the Torah and the mitzvahs, even amongst other people who don't necessarily keep that. And that worked, because Ephraim and Manasseh did that. So his keeping Shabbos and his Oinek Shabbos, the Torah tells us, was a foolproof plan.
And what's the connection with Ephraim and Manasseh, sorry?
Because, Ephraim and Manasseh, we bench our children to be like Ephraim and Manasseh, like in this week's Parshas Vayechi. And why specifically them more than all the other Shvatim? So, the famous Vart is that because they managed to live by themselves, not with the rest of Klal Yisrael, and managed to keep strong to who they were. And therefore, we wish, when Yaakov knew that, you know, we're going to be in Golus for a long time, and that would be the most useful, so to speak, bracha that we could give our children, they could manage to withstand all the challenges. And Oinek Shabbos is mentioned in Shehiyah. And therefore, we're going to talk about that this morning. But the main reason is because I'm learning this, so again, that's where I'm up to. So it's very nice to blame it on the Dvar Torah, but I haven't done Hatmana and Chazara yet. But Shehiyah, the Rosh says, and the Beis Yosef quotes this, is that one has to be careful to keep the Mesorah and the Minhag of their parents, so as not to be Mevatel their Oinek Shabbos. So I'm going to start explaining a bit of the background. Then I want to discuss maybe what to do if you're stuck without a hot plate and without a blech. Many times you go on holiday and you can forget, or you think there's going to be a gas stove, there's an electric stove. You know, it's interesting because many of us can't go on holiday at the moment. But it's one thing not to go on holiday, but at least we should talk about holidays that go well. But this morning we're going to talk about holidays that would go badly. Maybe that will make us feel slightly better, because when you're stuck without food and you know you've got 24 hours and your whole Shabbos is going to be ruined, you wish you were back home. So maybe it's even helpful, because here, well, at least we have all the luxury, the facilities of enjoying Shabbos. But it's one of the worst feelings when you realize you're not quite sure what to do, and you're stuck and there's no one around, and you want to be able to have the Oinek Shabbos properly, but you think you're going to be stuck. So hopefully this morning, in the time that we have, we'll find some heterim when you'll start, and we'll talk about the ideal scenario as well. You can start a malacha before Shabbos and that malacha continue in your keli on Shabbos by itself. There's a surin for you to work on Shabbos, you are Rodim and Behemoth, etc. But according to Beis Hillel at least, your kelim, so to speak, can work for you on Shabbos. As long as there are exceptions with Marasayan and Ashmaas Kol, which we won't discuss this morning, but generally speaking, a keli can work for you. You can start soaking your dyes before Shabbos, the Mishnah says, and that can continue in that process on Shabbos as long as you don't eat it at all and you're not involved in the malacha. And importantly for our shiur this morning, one can start cooking before Shabbos midaraisa, and even if the food is only slightly cooked, as long as the malacha and the act of bishul you started prior to Shabbos coming in and prior to Tosefer Shabbos to an extent, then that action could go by itself and you can take the food off later that night when you're ready to eat. Even though in effect your food was cooked on Shabbos, it wasn't cooked before Shabbos. There's a few raw potatoes and pieces of meat in the pot. You put that onto the fire, maybe like half an hour before Shabbos, and that continued cooking. So at 7 o'clock, when you were ready to have your Suddas Shabbos, it was ready. That's Min HaTorah. Min HaTorah, you can start an action before Shabbos, and the action can continue unaided by itself, and so to speak, your keli can work for you on Shabbos.
Even though it's not properly cooked.
Right, but then we have all the gezeiras of Chazal, which we're familiar with, and even if we don't know the intricacies, it's something we all do constantly on a weekly basis and by rote, or, you know, even. We have Shehiyah, Chazara, and Hatmanach, and in principle, for the purpose of the half an hour that we have, Chazal were concerned that you would stoke the coals which were underneath the food, because they cooked, you know, more like a barbecue in those days. It wasn't so much fire, it was more coals. And we're worried, Shema Lachtiu, maybe you're going to stoke the coals and you'll be over on the malacha of Havara, of causing fire to be burnt on Shabbos. Bishul maybe as well, but generally you're going to be over the malacha of Havara. At whatever stage the pot is of being cooked, the fact that you stoke coals and you reignite them, maybe they were dying out slightly, and you reignite them, well, that causes you to be over the malacha of Havara. And therefore there were many gezeiras enacted. One of them was Shehiyah. And Shehiyah generally means that if you leave a pot on the fire from before Shabbos, then you have to make sure that if you have coals, then you either remove your coals, or most of them, or you put ash onto the coals so that they aren't so glowing, and so that you've reduced the heat of them, says the Mechaber and the Tor.
Got a bit good.
Right. Just bear with me a second. So the Mishnah says in the beginning of Kira, if you have coals and you have food on there from before Shabbos, then make sure you do gara for kata, make sure you either put ash over your coals or you remove many of them, and then you can leave your pot on these coals for Shabbos. And we're not therefore concerned, maybe you'll come to stoke them after that. And that's all you need to do. Chazara is another halacha of taking it off. We'll talk about that at the end of the shiur briefly and bringing it back on. And atmana of just covering it completely with coals. That's not for today's discussion. But today we're talking about leaving your pot from before Shabbos on your fire or on your coals and making sure you pour some ash over them or remove the coals of them so as to enable you to carry on having hot food on Shabbos. Does that work so far? But what always bothered me about this until I learned this, well, how did that at all connect to the fire and the gas stoves that we have nowadays? We don't have any coal. You can't put any ash over anything to lower the heat. And it's not, I mean, what would be the point of even lowering the heat when you could just raise it again as well afterwards on the knob? In those days, it would be a foolproof scenario. You'd lower the heat slightly and that would reduce the cooking. It would be less likely you'd stoke it. Well, you can't do, there's no coals to, we know, we cook on fire. So, either way, if you look closely at the Gezeira of Chazal, according to the Ram, that the Machab and the Magen Avraham bring of Shehiyah, was that a person should lower the heat because this causes them to subconsciously not be involved anymore with the coals, and they won't therefore come to stoke those coals anymore on Shabbos. They detach themselves from the coals themselves. They could still go and afterwards stir the coals. And according to many Rishonim, you don't have to put ash over all of it. There could still be a few coals embering there in your pot. But once you've done the act of putting ash, you've subconsciously told yourself that you're detaching yourself from the coals. And therefore you won't subconsciously then go and stir the coal, and stir the coals themselves. That's the run. So the reason why you lower the heat is not necessarily because you want to lower the heat, but the lowering the heat causes you to back off from the coals and not to be so involved in stoking them, because you've remembered that you've put ash over them and it sort of reminds you to keep away. And therefore there's no reason why the blech shouldn't do the same thing. If you're worried you're going to turn up the fire or lower the fire, you put a blech over it. And it reminds you that today is Shabbos. And if it's Shabbos, therefore you can't turn up or down the gas. That's what the poskim say. The Chazon Ish is machme, but that's what, with Hatmana anyway, but with Chazara anyway, but Reb Moshe brings this, the blech as exactly the same as Garof for Katam, because this reminds you that therefore it's Shabbos and therefore you're not going to stoke them. So just to remind people from where we started from, we said you're allowed to start cooking Minat Torah before Shabbos, as long as you didn't do it on Shabbos. Midrabana, we have gezeiros. One of the gezeiros is, we're worried, Shema, you're going to maybe stoke the coals on Shabbos if you leave it on the fire. Maybe you're going to stoke them. So there are ways out of that. One of the ways out is, you put ash all over the coals, or over many of them, and that sort of reminds you that you shouldn't really be stoking those coals on Shabbos. And it reminds you that you don't want to raise the heat of them, you only want to lower the heat of them. And therefore you'll keep away from stoking them. And nowadays the equivalent of that is putting a blech over it. And when you put a blech over your fire, you've reminded yourself that therefore it's Shabbos and you can't and you shouldn't be stirring them at all. So what do you do if you're stuck? What do you do if you have no blech? Like we started with the Shia, how are you going to make sure your Oneg Shabbos is okay? How are you going to make sure your children stay on the derech, right, with Yosef? There may be a problem. You don't want it to be ruined in Wales if you send them to good schools here all along. But you know, so what are you going to do exactly? So are there any ways out in B'dievet scenarios? Because it's there to remind you you shouldn't be stoking your coals on Shabbos. And it subconsciously detaches you from the fire. And maybe it's when you see it, there's a discussion, or maybe just the fact that you've done it already pushes you away. So what are you going to do if you're stuck? So as was mentioned previously, in the first few daf of Kira, there's a machlokes between Chananya and the Rabbanon. And the Rabbanon hold, even if something is fully cooked, potentially, and even if it's fully cooked, if the food will benefit by being on the fire, which is termed as mitstamek v'yafeloi, then you have to do garof for katan. You have to pour the ash over the coals, and that will detach you from the coals for Shabbos, and that will remind you that you shouldn't be busy with the coals over Shabbos. Once you pour the ash over it, even if it's a fully cooked pot, that's okay. Chananya, however, is makel. Chananya holds, as long as the food is cooked, kamachal ben drusoy, which is the famous term, which is the bandits of drusoy would always have to run off before eating any fully cooked food, and therefore once your food is maybe edible or partially cooked, that according to Chananya, that's enough. And you wouldn't need garof for katam anymore. So this is a famous machlokas in the first parak and in the third parak of Shabbos, that when you need garof for katam, when you need the reminder not to stoke, is that even when it's fully cooked? Because just the fact that the pot's on the fire and you think it will benefit from being on the fire, you might come to stoke it. Therefore, you need to put a reminder there to push you away. Or according to Chananya, once it's edible, you're not so tempted to stir it anymore because you know your food will be ready for Shabbos either way. And therefore, the temptation is not there to go and stir it. And therefore, once it's kamachal ben drusoy, once it's partially cooked, it's mutter. And one doesn't need garof for katam at all. And the Machaba brings the two shitters, and the second shitter he brings is Chananya. The once it's partially cooked, either generally speaking, or half cooked, then it's mutter without garof for katam, and the Ramah was mekel. The Bihalacha says that it's not ideal to be mekel if you are able to, because they were only mekel for people because of Oynek Shabbos, like we mentioned. They want people to enjoy Shabbos, and if they had a certain minute that they were keeping, they want them to carry it on. But there's a kula. You don't have to have a blech if it's partially cooked from before Shabbos. So that's what you do. So if you're stuck without a blech, the first thing you can do is cook it so it's at least partially cooked, half cooked, and then you can put it straight on the fire even though it's not covered. That's one. The second way out, which is, I would say, slightly harder to achieve, is if you have raw meat from before Shabbos, that's generally speaking going to be for tomorrow's meal, then you're not going to be thinking about that meat on Friday night. And by the time Shabbos morning has come, that meat will be completely cooked. And therefore it's unlikely after that that you're going to go ahead and stoke it on Friday night, because you know this pot has till tomorrow morning to be cooked. And therefore you're not going to stoke it on Friday night. That means if you have some raw frozen meat that you put in a pot that is generally for tomorrow and it's not for today, then there's no gezerah of Chazal that maybe you're going to go and stoke the coals, because the Gemara Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis tells us that you're Masiach Das from this meat. You're not thinking about it too much simply because it's for tomorrow. And if it's for tomorrow, there'll be enough time for it to cook by the time tomorrow arrives. Meat that's for tonight, you'll be concerned that maybe it's not completely cooked and therefore you'll come to stoke it. But meat that's for tomorrow, you know it's got the whole night to cook, and therefore you're allowed to leave it on the fire without a blech. So just to go back, we were discussing what to do if you're stuck. So the blech is there to remind you that it's Shabbos and you shouldn't be machata, you shouldn't be involved with the coals at all. So what do you do if you don't have a blech, or if you come to a place with an electric stove or an induction which you can't use on Shabbos, which you can't put a blech on, or you can forget your deposit coming back from the place where you are because it will smash. So what do you do? So the first thing is just make sure your food is cooked before Shabbos. It's ideal if it's completely cooked. But even if it's half cooked, or even a third cooked, says the Mishnah Berurah in Reishon and Gimel, if you're stuck, it's also okay. So if you've just arrived before Shabbos and you could cook much of the food before, then you can leave it on without a blech. That's one. Number two is if you want to maybe put food on for tomorrow. So if it's completely raw by the time Shabbos comes in, and it's not even Yad Soleh this boy when Shabbos comes in, that means it's cold, and it's going to heat up only to be ready for tomorrow, then that's also going to be mutter. And the third one is that the Gemara in Daf Yud Ches also discusses a case of an oven that was sealed up, and it was unlikely that you'd open this oven because there's a seal there. And if there's a seal there, then that will remind you itself that it's Shabbos now. And similarly, the Paskim said that therefore, if you cover up the knobs of your gas, even if you haven't covered the fire itself, but you cover up the knobs that were there, then that's the heter of this sealed up oven. And because it's impossible for you to turn it, and it's impossible for you to open it, therefore, you won't come to turn the gas on Shabbos itself, and therefore it's mutter for you to use it. And that, all you have to do is cover up all the knobs itself, maybe you should write on it Shabbos, and that will be a strong reminder for you to keep away from this over Shabbos. Those are the three ways out that you should use. First of all, make sure it's cooked before Shabbos. Second of all, you should make sure, if you can't do that, and maybe you want at least hot foods for tomorrow, then make sure it's raw by the time Shabbos comes in. So therefore you're not going to be concentrating that on Friday night, because you know it's not ready for Friday night, and it's only ready for tomorrow. Third of all, if you're stuck, you can cover just the knobs themselves, or maybe even remove the knobs, and sellotape them. And therefore that will be a powerful reminder for you to keep away from the gas and the fire over Shabbos. But there's one or two caveats. First of all, if you're leaving a pot on the fire without any cover at all, then you can't do chazara. You can't take it off and have das and then put it back because it's uncovered. Chazara is only mutter when you've covered up the flame. And in these scenarios over here, you were enabled to have hot food over Shabbos, however, you can't do chazara. So if you want to keep the food on, the Chaznish says in Siman Lamed Zayin, and you keep the food on the flame and serve from the pot itself. That's a bidyeved, because you shouldn't really be putting your spoon in to serve. But since you're not putting your spoon in to stir, only to serve, then you leave the pot on the stove for Friday night itself. So, just to summarize what we've said from the beginning, we started off talking about Yosef. That Yosef felt that the Shmira Shabbos, and specifically the Oinek Shabbos, was what would help be machanek his children in Mitzrayim to keep them on the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We then said that Shehiyah, the Beis Yosef and the Rosh, then you're going to be careful for your Oinek Shabbos as well, and make sure that if you need to be, then you can be makel in certain scenarios. We said the reason why you cover it is simply to detach yourself from it. You won't subconsciously stir if it's covered or if there's ash put on. The blech achieves the same thing as the ash. Now, what do you do if you don't have a blech? So there's three things you could do. Either you could cook it, kamach or ben drusoy, at least before Shabbos, and therefore you can enable your pot to be uncovered on the stove without any blech at all, with just the fire. Number two, the second thing you can do is you could have food for tomorrow that you don't have any dust to have it on for tonight if it's completely raw, but then it has to be, according to the Chaz Nish, not Yasser Edes, but before Shabbos. And the third thing you can do is you can cover up all the knobs of the gas stove that, from where you're cooking from. But the caveat is that you can't do chazara if you have an open flame. So what you'll have to do if you want the food for tonight and for tomorrow is you have to serve from the pot itself on Friday night, and the b'dieved you can rely on that in the cases of Bishul Shkoyach, and I wish everyone a lovely day.
Thank you. Bless us today.